This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're going to spend the first part of this hour talking about the effects of the coronavirus here in the region. Governor Baker addressed the issue today, stressing that the risk for contracting the virus remains low in the state, but he's been in daily contact with federal and local agencies since the beginning of the outbreak globally.
I would expect that the beginning of next week, we'll probably have a fully formulated plan that we can show people.
So that announcement comes as PAX East kicks off today at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. The annual video game convention brings together some of the biggest names in the industry. But this year, some companies like Sony and Facebook are missing the convention due to the concerns about the spreading coronavirus. WBUR's Callum Borchers is at PAX East right now. You can hear it. And he joins us from there. Hey there, Callum.
Hey, Tiziana.
So I can tell it's noisy, Callum. What else is it like there?
Well, at the moment, Tiziana, I'm standing next to an actual castle. I mean, this is like a 12-foot-high structure that a video game studio called Motion... Of course, right? They've erected this giant castle in the middle of the convention floor. There are people in costumes everywhere. It's kind of like Halloween in February. It's also a bit like a drag show, Tiziana. You know, we've done these segments on the show about gender-bending fashion. This is the place to find it. You've got a lot of men here dressed up as their favorite female characters from video games. It is really quite a place.
All right, so how is attendance? Again, I've noted it sounds quite busy, but how is the attendance stacking up to previous years? And have you heard either people express concerns or seen any, you know, unusual or notable precautions we might not have seen in previous years?
Yeah, well, I mean, people who've been coming to PAX East for a long time, Tiziana, tell me this is actually a really good turnout for a Thursday, which is usually the first day of the convention. On my T-ride over, I saw a tweet about someone wearing a full hazmat suit here at PAX East. I've been unable to find this person, but I do see people taking some health precautions.
I guess we don't know if that was a costume or a hazmat suit either.
Right, it might have been Joker. Exactly. Could have been a joke or it could have been a legitimate precaution. But
right.
I met a fellow named Luther Patanji. He's a writer and game designer at a small gaming studio in San Francisco called the Joy Manufacturing Company. And he says people are being really vigilant about their hygiene here.
Well, of course, there are concerns about coronavirus. Everyone at PAX has been on guard with being about as safe as humanly possible. We've got hand sanitizer stations at pretty much every single place around here. You'll see teams regularly wiping down their equipment with Lysol wipes and stuff.
And I'll mention that Patanji was telling me this as he was dressed in a full dress and wig and rouge. She's the star of his video game called Ambition, which is about a 19th century woman in Paris. I'm also seeing, Tiziana, people in those surgical masks, including a man named Vlad Sipliak. He's the co-founder of a Taiwanese video game company called Another Indie. So I asked him about the mask.
I'm from Asia. I'm just used to it. It's not because of the virus. I wear it every time I'm at convention, just not to get sick. Because after this, we have to fly to San Francisco for GDC, so I don't want to get sick in the middle.
And the GDC that he mentioned there, Tiziana, is the Game Developers Conference, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And they're also seeing some dropouts, just like PAX East here.
So to that point of dropouts, I mentioned that Sony pulled out over concerns. Can you tell us any more about that? And why would an event like PAX East be that kind of concern?
Well, Sony made the decision last week, and I think the key phrase in its statement about the decision was this. It said, quote, global travel restrictions are changing daily. And so it wasn't about a specific threat here in Boston so much as about the uncertainty. And, of course, Sony is based in Japan, which just today, Tiziana, has asked all of its schools to close for about a month to try to halt the virus's spread. So you could imagine if you were part of the Sony contingent here in Boston this week and then something like that happened back home, you wouldn't certainly want to get caught up in transit. So I think it was really sort of a better safe than sorry type of thing for Sony.
So, Callum, it sounds like a boisterous first day. Is Sony's absence affecting enthusiasm among the attendees, or are people talking about that decision and questioning it?
They are talking about it, and some people are disappointed because they were expecting to play a new Sony game called The Last of Us 2 for the first time. But I think that people generally here know the kinds of things that Sony has to offer. They're looking forward to the release of PlayStation 5. A lot of attendees come here, Tiziana, to try to discover something new. So you see a lot of independent game developers here.
So, you know, Callum, WBUR has been reporting on how fears about the coronavirus have been negatively impacting businesses here in the area. For example, Chinatown. Any overlap with what we're seeing at PAX East and what we've been seeing with businesses here in Boston?
Right. I mean, it doesn't seem to have harmed the attendance so far, but the common worry I think you're talking about there is racism. I mean, people who have an irrational fear of going to Chinatown might also fear coming to PAX East here because it's a huge international event with a lot of people traveling here from Asia. I talked about this with an attendee named Norma Heller. She's a local. She's from Boston. She came dressed as the character Maya from the game Borderlands 2, and here's what she told me.
There's definitely a lot of racism around the fear-mongering, for sure, but we're going out to Chinatown for dinner tonight, so it hasn't touched us, at least.
And so here, at least, Tiziana, I mean, that seems to be the prevailing attitude. You know, take reasonable precautions, but don't be afraid of whole groups of people.
Well, that's good to hear. And that is WBUR Bostonomics reporter Callum Borchers. Thanks for taking the time out with us, Callum. I appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
All right, so the gaming industry isn't the only part of the economy affected by COVID-19 or this coronavirus. Here to talk about the overall economic impact is Evan Horowitz, executive director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University, also a former Boston Globe economics reporter. Welcome back, Evan.
Tiziana, it's great to be here.
All right, so we know this virus is spreading. There are some fears that it could become a global pandemic. Global pandemics affect global economies, don't they?
So, two things to say. One, I think we're past fear that it becomes a global pandemic and closer to likelihood that it becomes a global pandemic. The other is that the economic effects have already started. So really, it's a two-part conversation. It's there have already been substantial economic effects in China that will ripple out. There could be ongoing effects in Europe and eventually in the United States.
Can you characterize a little bit about these substantial economic effects in China that we've already seen?
So the way to think about it really is to think about companies and their supply chains, where if you're a big technology company, do you actually manufacture your parts, your phones? Or if you're a big car company, where do you actually get the parts from your cars? And in a lot of cases, the answer is China.
And so, you mean a big technology or car company anywhere in the world?
I mean, particularly in Silicon Valley. I mean, if you're a big technology company in California, it doesn't mean you make your parts in California. It means most likely you make them in China or you have them made in China. And if people are sick in China, they can't go to work to make those parts. If there are quarantines that force them to stay at home, they can't go make those parts. If those parts then have to get shipped to the United States and nobody's at the port or not enough people are at the port, they can't get on the boat, they can't get here or cargo planes, whatever it is. So it's not. This is not a future eventuality. It's already baked in. It just hasn't showed up in the statistics yet because there's a statistics lag. But part of this is done. The Chinese economy is already suffering, and that will affect us. And the question is, how dramatic are the future effects as the virus spreads?
So you captured my attention with this phrase, the statistics lag. How long is that lag? When will stuff like this actually start to show up?
I think in the next month you'll start to see it in the trade data and then moving forward in GDP. So, I mean,
Soon.
Oh, soon. Yeah, it will not take 6 months, but it could take 2 or 3 months. And it took the markets a little longer than I expected to recognize this, but obviously they've caught on and are crashing as a result.
Okay, so let's talk about that because, wow, what a week in the markets.
Understatement, yes. So in the stock market in particular, the bond markets caught on sooner. There have been troubles in the bond markets for a few weeks now, and that's not unusual.
How come?
Bond traders tend to be a little more sensitive to these kinds of baseline economic risks, and the stock market can hover on optimism for a lot longer than the bond market can. So it's not unusual to see this kind of divergence, but it doesn't last. You know, you could think of it as like a mawing gap, you know, they get further and further apart and then they crack together.
They correct, kind of.
Yeah. And that's what's happening this week. The stock market has collapsed down to where the bond market was in. And that's not, I mean, it's not surprising for a couple of reasons. One, stocks seem overvalued independent of the question of coronavirus. Two, coronavirus is going to affect the real economy, which affects the profitability of firms, which is what the stock market is really about. So traders are recognizing that and starting to price it in.
So I'm aware both of the volatility of the markets and also people talk about sort of the irrational reactions of the markets. Do you anticipate this kind of instability in the stock market to go on for a while, or are we sort of seeing this catching up between the bond and the stock market and maybe next week things level off a little?
Man, if I knew, I would not be here. I think, you know, the safe bet is always to expect volatility in the stock market. But no, if I had to guess, I don't think it's over because, as I said, I think the ripple effects in the real economy are just beginning to show up and they're going to amplify in the days and weeks and months ahead.
So let's go back to that ripple effects in the real economy. You know, we've been here at Radio Boston talking about, okay, we got to be careful to be clear that there's a difference between the stock market and the overall economy. I also looked it up. Gallup says that as of April of last year, only 55% of Americans even owned a stock. But everybody's plugged into the economy. When might we start to see or feel that kind of economic impact in everyday life of, you know, the average Bostonian, for example?
Okay, so you think about it, one on the disease side and two on the economy side. I think it's going to start showing up on the economy side relatively soon in the form of likely – it's a traditional thing called supply side shock. So basically what it means is if it's harder to make things, harder to ship them, more expensive to do that, then prices are likely to go up and the supply of things is likely to go down. So it'll be harder to find things and things will get a little bit more expensive. The extent of that is still up in the air because it depends on how far the disease spreads and whatnot. But that's going to happen and people are going to start to see it. And then the other side of it is people are going to start worried about getting sick.
Okay.
And that means they may not go to work. They may have to stay home with their kids. They may not want to go to the supermarket to do shopping. And that's going to affect their daily lives. And of course, that's also going to plug into the U.S. economy. If people aren't going out to go grocery shopping, then supermarkets aren't going to be selling as many things. So I don't think it will be long before there are kind of real world impact on people's lives.
Okay, we've got about 30 seconds left. So in that, let me just ask you long term implications. And I don't mean to sound callous, but bad and good that could come from this.
Well, the bad is obvious. So let's look at the good for 30 seconds. There will be new pressure, I think, for a more rapid path to vaccine development. And there's talk of that, and the FDA is interested in that. And I think that's something that will be helpful, not just for this, but for future pandemics. So that's good. And the other good may be in Chinese politics. One of the things that a pandemic tends to do is to delegitimize regimes, because the regime in China clearly wasn't as responsive as necessary to the early warning signs here. So there's a possible upside in terms of Chinese political transparency.
Okay. Evan Horowitz, Executive Director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University and a former Globe Economics reporter. Thanks.
Thank you, Tizian.